We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
WGR Sports Radio 550 presents Sports Talk Saturday.
The mask. Eagle!
On WGR.
That was the Masked Singer theme, but in the light of...
Have you watched that show at all?
The Masked Eagle.
Have you watched the Masked Singer?
I have not. But I ask you now, Lou, quickly, who is the Masked Eagle that continues with these anonymous quotes?
Oh!
Lou didn't get it.
That totally went over my head.
Who's the Masked Eagle?
Jason Peters. Oh. Now, it's got to be a defensive player because what they said was just not factually correct.
Why does he have to be a defensive player?
Because what they said is incorrect, and if a receiver said it, they're a hypocrite, so, considering they've dropped 17 passes this year.
You don't know, for the second time in 6 months, we have Eagles players saying anonymous
Third time. They said Wentz throws it to Ertz too much in December of last year.
Wait, so there were two Wentz anonymous stories.
Yeah, I think it's the they gotcha. Think Zach Ertz thinks it's the
and
same
now,
guy.
Now they're after guy. GM Howie Roseman.
Yeah, they're... And, got to find the snake. So the Bills might be playing a team in turmoil. I don't know.
Why do you think it's a defensive player?
Because what they said is not nearly correct. And I feel like an offensive player would know that. What the game plan has been, how they've been playing.
What did they say?
That Wentz in the offense is throwing the ball down the field too much and they're not checking down enough, when in actuality they're one of the worst teams in the league. They're one of the teams that throws 20-plus yards down the field the fewest.
My guess would be then it's a running back.
Eagle.
Jordan Howard? You think it's Jordan Howard?
I think it might be Miles Sanders.
No way. He's catching all the 45-plus yard passes.
But they're not checkdowns.
He's feeding down the field.
Hear me out here. Miles Sanders getting a lot of yards. Last week,
that's a good thing.
I had
why
him
would
in
he
a
be
fantasy league. He had 19 points. He had 6 touches.
But he had 2 receptions of 30-plus yards. Why would he be complaining?
That's what I'm saying. If I was a guy that had... only 3 catches, but 2 of them were big. I want more than 3 catches.
He's getting them every week, though. He's had 5 30-plus yard receptions in a month.
But it's
how
there's no
Miles
value.
How would Sanders know about last year's proceedings, though? He's a rookie.
Aha. Good point.
It's true. I think it's the same guy.
I think that would have made sense, though. I don't think you're seeing this. If every time you catch the ball, it's going for big yardage, why wouldn't you want the ball more?
I think it's Jordan Howard because he's always the one Wentz doesn't want to check it down to because he's not very explosive in the passing game. That's my theory if it's not a defensive
weird
player.
Weird stuff going on in Philadelphia.
Yeah. So the Bills might be playing a team next week. I mean, one of their biggest challengers, but the Eagles could be if they lose to the Cowboys tomorrow night, 3-4.
DeSean Jackson going to play against the Bills next week?
I think he might return next week, but he's never going to be 100% for the rest of the year. It's an abdomen strain. It's basically a sports hernia, and when you don't get the surgery, you're never 100% until you get it. So... even if he plays, Tre'Davious White, Levi Wallace are going up against maybe a 65% DeSean Jackson, which is still dangerous, but it's not nearly what he was heading into the season.
It's a big game for the Bills in that it's really their only challenge in the next month.
Eagle! Like,
that's it. What is that from, by the way, Derek?
That is from Scrubs.
Oh.
Never watched Scrubs.
Never watched Scrubs.
What is wrong with the
never,
both of you?
Never watched Scrubs.
I watched Eagle! El Camino yesterday, Joe.
Oh, wow.
I saw El Camino.
All right, we're going to have to talk about this. Can we talk about it, though? It's been out a week. If you haven't seen it yet.
Oh, spoilers? Yeah.
Okay, we'll do it quick, but I'm going to give everybody a 10-second...
Can I talk about parental abuse because you two have never seen Scrubs?
I'm going to give everybody a 20-second warning here. If you are a Breaking Bad fan, you should have seen it already, but if you haven't and you're looking to see El Camino, the Jesse Pinkman movie on Netflix, turn the radio off for a couple of minutes here because we're going to talk about it. So you've got another like 5 seconds here as I try to give you ample time here to find the dial or the
app.
It's
on you at this point. I was late to the game.
Right.
And all right. I watched it.
Spoiler alert. What'd you think?
I liked it. There wasn't a lot of action. I thought there was gonna be more chase downs. I didn't think it was gonna be as easy for him to escape. But it was definitely a nice wrap on the Breaking Bad series. I felt satisfied after. There wasn't as much action.
Result was great. Yeah, the end result was awesome.
I loved the old western showdown between Jesse and that guy to get the money.
That was really cool. And no one saw what he had coming there in the pocket.
Yep. Just seeing Bryan Cranston being Walter White again was awesome, even though it was in a flashback. I was disappointed he wasn't alive. I was hoping for that, but that was a stretch anyway.
I read he wouldn't have came back if he was alive.
I would have loved it if he was in jail and they were trying to get out of him where Jesse is. But no, overall, I thought it was a good movie and it was a good wrap to it. It wasn't a lot of action, but yeah, overall, it was cool to see Skinny Pete again and all the guys.
Badger.
It's been a long time. Breaking Bad stopped in 2013?
Yeah, I think so.
And I watched it on Netflix in like 2015, but even so, it's been like 4 years.
There were a lot of cameos, which I
will say the one part I didn't like. What? He plays Lance in Friday Night Lights.
Jesse Plemons.
Yeah, he's big. He's put on some weight.
That was tough because you're right.
He was a younger kid when he was super skinny in Breaking Bad,
and now he's gained a little weight.
I thought he was only going to be in a little bit of it when they were just showing his face when Jesse was looking.
Because they were covering it on purpose.
And I'm like, oh, cool. It's like a Home Improvement thing where they won't show his face, you know, over the fence. But then his whole body was in it for like 20 minutes, and that was the one thing I didn't like. But overall, it was good. One out of ten.
What would you give it?
Eight and a half.
It's a good score.
Eight and a half.
I give it like a nine.
Give me a chase down scene and by with the cops, and I'm good.
I didn't need a chase down scene.
No, it was kind of easy for him to escape. He was pretty wanted.
It wasn't that easy. He had to find a way to get $200,000.
I'm sad there was no breakfast scenes with Finn.
Breaking into his parents' house.
Yeah.
Like, he was very smart. He learned. He learned from...
I was going to say, he was way more controlled, and I don't think... It's not like time passed from the series to the movie. There was no time lapse. It started off right when he was driving away from when Walt saved him. So, I don't know if he would have actually done that, but... No, overall, good movie. So I would definitely check it out if I didn't just spoil it all for you.
I gave you ample time if you were not looking to know what happens. 803-0550 is the phone number. Tomorrow we got Bills and Dolphins, a game that I don't really find all that interesting and that I kind of think I know what's going to happen. I think the Bills are going to get out ahead early. They're going to run the ball all day, and they're going to win by like 24.
You don't think there's any chance of Fitzmagic?
No. Not at all.
Yeah, because at least even in Tampa, he had Mike Evans and Chris Godwin. I don't think it's possible.
I have not even braced myself for a post-game show with Nate tomorrow, sitting in this room, where they lose. I don't even know how I would talk about it. Like, how do you talk about it? They'd be 4-2. They'd have easy games coming up, but you just lost to the Dolphins, the worst team in NFL history. Holy cow.
Like, at the same time,
how do you even begin to think that way? I just can't get there. I can't get there. I think this defense is way too good. I know it's Fitzpatrick. I think I would feel more confident if it was Rosen, but I already feel almost all the way confident. So it doesn't matter too much to me on who's playing quarterback for them. I don't know how they score. Tom Brady only put up 9 points on this defense. How the hell is Miami going to do it?
They're not. I feel like this is kind of just the theme of the entire season. Because even if you win, you're going to be like, yeah, like they were supposed to win. And, you know, even if they dominate, like you said earlier, I want to see Josh Allen smack a really bad team around and put up big-time numbers in the passing game. But even if he does that, like you said, it's not really saying anything that, oh, this means now he can go in and beat the Chiefs in Arrowhead.
Like you can only lose tomorrow.
So,
in a way.
I feel like that's the entire season at this point. Well, right? Except for the Eagles game and maybe Baltimore.
Well, it's the opposite of the Patriots game. Again, I thought the Patriots game, they could do no wrong. I thought as long as they were in that game, we were going to feel good about it. In this Dolphins game, I feel like as long as they do what they're supposed to, we're going to feel fine. Mm-hmm. But
I don't think anybody's
there's not a lot of room to go up tomorrow thinking about the Bills for the long term. But there's I can't see the bottom of the pool. If they lost this team, again, I don't even know how we would talk about it. It would be almost an unmitigated disaster. You can't give away a game to Miami. You cannot at home. You can't give this game away.
Especially now with a tougher test coming next week. Yeah. I don't think anybody's going to
be an underdog against the Eagles if they lost.
I don't think anybody's going to be satisfied or feeling anything more until they play. I think it's even the Eagles, like they're an NFC team. Like when you're trying to figure out the Bills' place in the AFC, it's going to be that Ravens game and it's going to be the New England game. Until then, they're really just going to be doing what they're supposed to, and it's beating up on bad teams. So,
well, except for that Eagles game and except for that Browns game.
But even if they lose to the Eagles, like, I don't know, for me,
we'll feel fine, I think.
Yeah, because you're more so, the Eagles are supposed to be a really good team this year. They were a favorite to win it all in the offseason by a lot of the national media. So for me, more so, it's not going to change your perspective on the Bills. What will change it in their place in the conference is, and again, losing the Eagles, that might make you think, okay, if they get to the Super Bowl, you know, that's a team you got to think about. But for the AFC, which is where you're thinking right here, if they lose to Baltimore and New England, that's more so when you start to really figure out who this team is, because the Patriots and the Ravens right now might be the two teams ahead of the Bills while Patrick Mahomes is out. So until then, yeah, it's going to be a lot of these games where it's they did what they were supposed to, or, oh my gosh, it's a disaster scenario where they lost to a team that had no business being even in it with the way this Bills defense is playing and the efficiency the offense has had in, you know, crucial areas like the red zone. So I think they should beat this team by, I mean, Matt Bovee we had on said, you know, if they win 24-10, you should be feeling pretty good. I want them to cover this 17-point spread.
I do too. I mean, the Dolphins aren't even coming close to covering the spread. They're losing by an average of 26 points a game.
That is with,
by the way, a 1-point loss last week.
Yeah, right.
They've lost by 26 points a game.
I was just about to ask what the score was last week.
So they are just, like, every metric you could look at, they're terrible. They're terrible. And the Bills aren't great at everything. Like, right now, they're actually, their scoring drives per drive, or points per drive, is not that great. And that's really with turnovers. But they're moving the football well enough. They're running the ball well enough. They're passing the ball well enough. And the defense is amazing. So all of that put together, you're at least a good team. And you might even be very good. This thing, this tank that's rolling into town right now from Miami, I respect it, but they're no threat to me. Now, on the long term, though, I will say this. They're no threat to me at all tomorrow. Long term, I'm not discounting that Miami could be a threat to me. In this division,
I mean, they're going to have 3 first-round picks and probably 2 top 5 next year.
They get Tua and they get all those first-round picks. I don't think they'll be good next year. They'll be way too much to make up for. With all, like, they have to rebuild everything else.
Right.
They've literally torn down everything. They're going to have to build everything back up. So it will take a little time. But 2 years down the road, they start to get it together a little bit. And Tua's their quarterback.
They could have the Bama duo, like, because the Steelers are going to be, they have the Steelers' first round pick. And at first I was thinking, I understand the tank. I understand trading away some picks for first rounders to get Tua or Herbert, or, you know, it's going to be Tua, but whoever you want in this draft. At the same time, I'm like, why are you trading away a franchise left tackle that hasn't even hit their prime yet in Laremy Tunsil for a first, when you're probably just going to spend that pick on his replacement? And the same thing with Minkah Fitzpatrick. But I think they were smart to do it with Pittsburgh, because right now that's you're looking at a first overall pick most likely, and then what, a fourth overall, fifth, sixth overall?
Well, that I don't know. Pittsburgh beating the Chargers last week was surprising.
Do you expect that to be a consistent thing?
I don't know.
I don't think so. So you're probably looking at 2 really high picks. That could be Jerry Jeudy of Alabama, Ruggs. There are some speed demons in this draft when it comes to the wide receiver class, and, you know, it's a talented pool of prospects, so it's a good year to have 3 first round picks. Look, if you're a Sabres guy and you were in on that tank for Connor McDavid or Jack Eichel, you respect what the Dolphins are doing right now, I think, and especially in the NFL, because there's no lottery. I mean, you're guaranteed, if I go 0-16 this year, I'm getting Tua.
I think there's a race right now in the AFC East to be king of the hill after Brady's done, and I will say, right now I think the Bills are out ahead. But I don't think the Jets are too far behind, I think Miami is making a big swing to get back into this. And they're, again, this whole thing, like, if I'm the Dolphins, Brady's still playing. Whatever. Like, let him go
Take
his last
time,
couple
yeah.
years. I'm just going to try to build to be good in 2023. Like, honestly, that's what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
If I have job security, that would be my plan. And it would be frustrating,
it's not,
and you'd have to have a lot
plan,
of patience
sure.
to do it. But realistically, that's what all these teams should be trying to do. Try to be a playoff team. I'm not saying to tank if you're not somewhat good, but to think about being like a Super Bowl contender, or to think about being like the favorite in the AFC East. I just, until that guy retires, I'm not thinking about it at all, almost at all. And right now, I've got another good young quarterback in Sam Darnold in the division. I might have another really good one in Tua at some point here. I've got at that point, you'll have three good young quarterbacks in the division, and they'll all be going back and forth to try to be that next kingpin. And maybe it'll just be like a split. That could happen. When's the last time we had a debate on who's going to win the AFC East? Like the AFC North for years with Dalton and the Bengals having a good roster and Roethlisberger and Flacco and the Ravens. Like the Browns were never in it. But every year you could have had a conversation between three teams and who would win that division. And maybe that could happen in the future here. Maybe once Brady retires, that could happen. Maybe it's what the NFC, AFC North has been for the last decade.
Three good
quarterbacks that all could win the division.
I feel like there's the three teams that they will be when Brady retires are going to be Buffalo, the Jets, and New England.
Until Belichick brings in Mariota and revives his career.
I said New England.
Oh,
you said New England.
Said New England.
Miami's going to screw this up because they are doing something that is harder to do in football than it is in any other sport. With the Sabres tank, there are only 20 players on that roster, and then everything else is organizational depth. They have put a depth charge onto their roster. They shipped out great players that they could have used as building blocks in Laremy Tunsil and Minkah Fitzpatrick. You have to now replace those.
But they have first-round picks to do
it. In addition to every other void on their roster.
But they didn't just give them up. They gave them up for first-round picks.
Those players not being on your team is going to get you a franchise quarterback.
Yeah. What I am saying, though, is it's tough to also replace those pieces. You better hit, or it's going to go badly, and I think it will.
But that's the thing. When you have so many picks, you don't have to hit. If you hit on half of them, but then you're going to replace those players.
Yeah, and right, again.
You need to hit on these picks.
I get your logic,
but you have to hit on half of them. That's the point. It's a math equation. Well, they've compiled so many assets.
First-round picks, it's already a bust.
No, that's the thing. That they have so many assets that it's a math equation. If they miss on half, they have so many pieces.
Well, and you're not just getting picks.
If you only hit on half, you're going to replace those players.
And you're not just getting picks. Those players not being on your team is going to pretty much guarantee that you're getting a franchise quarterback. Where, I mean, that's the thing. That's why we talked about with Buffalo. Like, remember Neuwirth was getting hot at goalie.
And they shipped him out.
And they got him out of there instantly. Like a week, Tim Murray got him out like a week or two later. So
it's harder
I agree
to
that
build.
you have to build
a 53-man roster than it is a 20.
But it's hard. I think it's easier, though, to tank in the NFL because you need a quarterback.
Well, actually,
to me, it's easier to turn it around quicker in football.
It's easier to
by
trade
getting that
up
quarterback.
For that quarterback when you have these assets. And the Miami Dolphins now they have these assets, but they don't have a roster. And the Bengals are accidentally doing it.
Well, here's the thing.
I'm going to laugh my ass off if Miami goes ahead and wins one game and Cincinnati holds the first overall pick.
We actually have an example, though, like of a team that's very quickly had a almost complete turnover with their offense and their defense. Right here, the Bills did this. Now, they did it separately. They tore down the defense and built it back up. Then they tore down the offense and built that back up. But within a period of 2-3 years, the Bills have almost completely had almost a complete turnover at all of their important positions, and they have depth and they have good players. And to me, even though Miami's doing it all at once, that doesn't mean within 3 years they can't do exactly what the Bills have done, because the Bills shipped out good players for picks. They did. Bad contracts, but they shipped out good players for picks. And they were able, and they didn't hit on all of them. They drafted Zay Jones. They traded up to get Zay Jones. That's the thing. I don't think you have to hit on all of them when you have the extra assets like the Bills did. And I think the Dolphins are doing that. The only difference is the Dolphins are doing it all at once. But to me, that doesn't matter to the end result. If you're doing it all at once, that doesn't change that by year three, you have to have it all put together. The only thing it changes is on the short term, are you good? And the Bills wanted to be a playoff team, and the Dolphins just wanted to get their quarterback without having to give up a bunch of extra picks like the Bills had to.
Right, they're not risking it.
Because they are doing it in a different and more extreme sense, this is where I sense it's going
to fail. They're not doing
it in
a more extreme sense. They're just doing it all at once as opposed to...
That's more extreme.
But it's the same amount of players they're getting rid of. It's the same... It's a complete turnover. That's all
it is. It is a complete turnover.
It's just timing.
You mentioned it, though, that the Bills did this by pieces, but they also
and the Bills risked not getting the quarterback. They had to move up for one, whereas Miami's going to get one without having to move two first-round picks.
Now, here's my biggest thing. Here's the biggest thing about it with a football problem. It's more of a football problem than the tanking issue. I think it's how Miami's doing it that is a little different than, say, the 76ers, or even with the Bills, if you want to point them out
easier
as something like that.
I think Miami, what they're doing is easier than those teams, because you're guaranteed something.
You're guaranteed nothing. The Colts go ahead and get Andrew Luck by accident because Peyton Manning got hurt. and then they go ahead and they ruined him. If this does not go well in 3 years for the Miami Dolphins, a new general manager comes in with a new vision.
Oh, sure.
And a new head coach.
I'd rather risk getting that player and then building than building and then not having the ability to get that player.
And that puts a TNT to whatever their plan is right now.
So are you saying they should have built their team stronger before they get the quarterback? Then you're not getting the quarterback then.
No, I'm saying you could have kept Laremy Tunsil and Minka Fitzpatrick, and you still would be terrible, and you wouldn't have had to give up anything to be the first overall.
I get that, but Minka Fitzpatrick wanted out. He wasn't happy with his role at safety. He wanted to be a part of that tanking team. You could get two first-round picks for a left tackle. Like, for me, you're taking that. Even as good as left tackle is, that's quarterback value. You don't see two first-round picks going unless it's an elite player like Jalen Ramsey or if it's for a quarterback.
And
so
if you screw up
that's just too much value.
If you screw up the three picks you got in return for those players, it's gonna burn.
But that's the thing I'm saying. Once you have all those picks like that, you don't have to hit on all of them. And here's the other thing. I kind of agree with both of you in a way. But to me, when I look at football, I think about, yes, it's not nearly as much of a sure thing at the top. Like, Tua is not as much a sure thing as Jack Eichel or Connor McDavid was. That's true. But the difference between football and hockey is, like, hockey, basketball, it's a lot harder to build that depth. It's a lot harder to build up those role players. We've seen the Sabres not be able to do it for how many years now? Football, because in the second round, you can get impact players right away. In the third round, you get impact players right away. Rounds 4 through 7, you can get a guy once in a while. That when you have all of those assets, to me, it's, unless you just completely screw it up, which I guess could happen, but if you're even somewhat competent, you're not going to do that. I think that it's just a numbers game for Miami, and they're going to get good enough role players at some point. Again, it might be 3 years away, mm-hmm. but once you have that quarterback in place, and if he is the goods, then I don't really care how long it takes, as long as it doesn't take 10 years. If I have the quarterback in place, eventually I'm hoping that I'm going to be able to figure that out. I'll have cap space because he's on a rookie contract. They're going to have nobody to pay. The Dolphins are going to have the same types of advantages that the Bills have had these past couple off seasons with all the cap space that they're going to have at some point. They're going to have nobody to pay, which means they'll be able to, not only if they don't hit on all these picks, they'll be able to make up for it like the Bills have. The Bills didn't hit on Zay Jones, so what they have to do? Go pay some receivers. If Miami misses on some of these picks, they will have the money mm-hmm. 2-3 years down the road to be able to say, all right, let's go to free agency and let's get it. And they'll be at least
screw it up.
Competent.
And I think the difference, too, between hockey and football, though, is when you get the quarterback, things are going to change. Maybe they don't take the drastic change from a basement team to a championship caliber team. But you see, even like, well, look what Kyler Murray's doing with Arizona. I mean, they might be 3-3-1 heading into next week. They play the Giants this week. I think the difference where you look at Connor McDavid and Jack Eichel, there's one playoff berth between the two. Over a, 4-5 year span, whereas at quarterback, things change almost instantly, even if you don't hit on all those picks. So for me, it's the value of the position, too. I agree that, yeah, and if you know you can get the first overall pick, I would probably still keep Fitzpatrick and Tunsil, but if I can get even worse and guarantee, because there's a lot of bad teams this year, if I can guarantee that I'm getting my pick of the litter at quarterback, I understand the logic.
I think that, like, Derek, I don't completely disagree with you. They might have gone too far with Tunsil
and
Fitzpatrick.
I think they went too far with
Tunsil.
Even though two first-round picks is so hard to...
You can make an argument.
It is, but Laremy Tunsil's great.
So you, I know you can make an argument that they've gone too far. But to me, the reason I respect it the most is I'm looking at a team like Miami, and I'm looking at a team like Cincinnati right now. Cincinnati, there are reports they're gonna try to extend A.J. Green. That is pure insanity.
And that's what they've been doing for 20 years.
Exactly. To me, that is the status quo. That is going along and being okay with what you are. And if I were, I would be pulling my hair out right now if I were talking about the Bengals. Like, you're not going to change? Are you kidding me? You're not going to start over? You had this head coach for 30 years, and now you're going to have the quarterback for another 20 years.
And Andy Dalton's been playing for 8 years already.
And Miami, in a way, had a version of that. They had a team that for years was good enough to get to the playoffs.
Made the playoffs once, yeah.
But for the most part, they're not going to be a playoff team. Like, they'll be okay, but they're no one's ever going to think of them as a real contender. And they kept going along, and they paid Ryan Tannehill, and they kept these guys around who were pretty good, like Jarvis Landry, but they weren't amazing. And what was their team, especially with Tannehill? Tannehill's the biggest point of that. What were they?
9-7 wild card.
Between 7-9 and 9-7. That's not where I want to live if I'm a football team. I don't want to be that. But a lot of teams are okay with it.
You mentioned
a lot of teams are okay with it.
Well, Miami gave Tannehill how long?
Miami is one of the only teams that, not one of the only, because actually Baltimore just did this too, but with a quarterback only. Miami went and they said, we're not okay with being a 7-8 win football team with Ryan Tannehill. We're not okay with it. So yes, maybe they went too far, but I respect the hell out of their philosophy of saying we're not okay with just being good enough at quarterback with Ryan Tannehill. We're not okay with just being good enough to squeak in once every 4 years. We are going to tear this thing down, and we're going to try to be better than that.
I agree with that. Like, absolutely. I respect the decision that they're making.
Now, you just don't like the extremes they took.
I don't like the extreme measure.
And I get it, yeah.
Now, I mentioned something, and I really did not stress the one part of it. I said don't miss on these picks. There's really, you can't screw the quarterback up. You cannot screw up the
selection. You got to try.
No, that's what the whole thing is for.
And you cannot screw up his development.
But you have to try for it, though. Again,
I know.
It's better to just. I would hate to be like, I know what I have in Dalton, so that's what I'm going to stick with.
Last question on this. Do you think the Tua is worth this tank?
I don't think so.
No. That's why I think the Dolphins will be in the basement.
If I'm Miami, I would have been doing this next year for Trevor Lawrence.
Would you rather have Tua Tagovailoa or Josh Allen?
Today, I'd rather have Josh Allen.
Lou?
Yeah.
Would you rather have Sam Darnold or Tua?
Sam Darnold.
Lamar Jackson. Mayfield or Tua?
Lamar Jackson. Tua. Baker Mayfield.
Would you rather have...
I'd rather have everyone except for Baker over Tua. And Rosen, obviously.
Lose war on Baker Mayfield.
You might be able to talk me out of...
What does he have, 11 interceptions this year already?
This year's draft class, this past one with the rookies?
Trubisky.
Oh my God.
That should be an easy one. I'm sorry.
Like, Daniel Jones is showing promise here. I mean,
I'd rather have Tua than Daniel Jones.
I think I'd rather
have Tua than anybody in last year's class. But would you rather have Tua or Trevor Lawrence? That's what we got to be thinking. Miami is 1 year too soon in this tank. Yeah. I think it's like the Sabres tanking the year before for Ekblad instead of Jack Eichel or Connor McDavid.
We will take a timeout here. We'll get back into hockey after the break. It is Sports Talk Saturday. Jody Biasi and football. Why did I say hockey? We're going to continue to go with football here. Jody Biasi, Derek Kramer, and Lou DiBiase here on WGR.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Welcome back to Sports Talk Saturday. Joe DiBiase, Derek Kramer, Lou DiBiase, all hanging out here for about another half hour here on WGR. Let's hear from Greg Cosell here. Always a good interview with One Bills Live. It was Chris Brown in for Steve Tasker yesterday. So here's Greg Cosell with Murph and Chris Brown.
Longtime senior producer for NFL Films, Greg Cosell. Hello, Greg. Say hello to Chris Brown. It's me and Chris Brown here today.
Murph, Chris, how are you?
We're doing great. Well. Thanks. Thanks for joining us. Hey, Chris and I were talking about this Bills-Dolphins game, and as Chris has said a couple of times, it's a tough sell. I mean, it's hard to convince people. It is. It's hard to convince people that the Dolphins should be taken seriously. I mentioned to Chris, it's been a long time since I've seen an NFL team so devoid of talent as this year's Dolphins appear to be. What do you think?
In all honesty, I had to look at some of their players and see who they were.
Yeah.
And that's very rare, Murph, with me, and I'm being totally honest, because I watch college players. I evaluate 250 college players every year after the season. I'm very familiar with who plays in the NFL. And I had to truly look up a number of their players to see who they were playing.
And now we know that Rashad Jones is out, one of the few recognizable players. Xavien Howard is a question mark for Sunday. I mean, that's a thin secondary, and I'm not saying Josh Allen is going to light them up and have the first 300-yard passing game for this franchise in about 40 games, but that certainly does not bode well for a competitive game by any stretch of the imagination, does it?
No, but I will say this, and I think you guys will understand this. You know, look, we've talked about the Bills' offense. We've talked about Josh Allen, and for the most part, I think Josh has played well, and I think that he's improving incrementally. Obviously, the Patriot game was not a good game, but I think for the most part, that there's been improvement. But I also think it is an offense that is not necessarily a lighted up offense. You know, it's not the kind of game where you just go into it now on a Friday saying, hey, they're going to win this game 35-10, no problem. And when games are close, you know, you always have to be a little careful. So I would expect that their defense would have a chance to dominate in this game. But I still, you know, you just hope that you're not in the fourth quarter, Murph, and you know this. You've seen too many of these games in your years in Buffalo where all of a sudden in the fourth quarter it's 13-10 and you're in a nail biter where one play changes the whole game.
Yeah. Hey, Greg, and you've seen this Buffalo offense over the first five games this season, and I mentioned this to Chris and to Steve earlier this week. My sense is with the players that they have a chance to get back in the lineup this week, including Devin Singletary, including Tyler Croft, and might be his first game as a Buffalo Bill.
Yeah.
I don't know if we really have a good sense yet of the identity of this Buffalo offense. Things could change if these guys, potential contributors, come in and do their thing, right?
I mean, look, I always liked Tyler Croft. I remember when he came out of Rutgers, I thought he was a very athletic tight end, went to Cincinnati, has faced injuries throughout his career, but I think that ability-wise, he gives you some dimensions as a receiving tight end. Yeah, no question. You know, they'd like him to become a factor in what they do. I think the identity, I think they'd like to run the ball. You know, I think they'd like Josh Allen to probably be more settled as a pocket player and only move as a parachute as opposed to let's make scrambling a part of his game. Obviously, there will be design runs depending on field position, field location, down and distance. But I think when all said and done, you know, you'd like to keep working toward Josh being an efficient, effective pocket quarterback.
So, Greg, with Devin Singletary looking like he's going to be back in the lineup this week, I mean, I think we all know Frank Gore is largely a between-the-tackles type runner. How does Singletary getting back into the fold here kind of diversify their running game, if you will, based on what you may have seen from him the first 2 weeks of the season before he got hurt?
Well, Chris, I think what you look at is the kind of runs they did with him. The runs they did with Singletary were outside runs, which you're not really going to do with Gore because they pulled the center and the guard or both right. guards. They got him on the perimeter, on the edge, and I think that's what they'd ultimately like to do. You get what we call pin-pull concepts where you pull linemen and then have your receivers blocked down inside and they pin inside. So I think those were the runs that were effective with Singletary. We saw that in the preseason. We saw that on runs before he got hurt. So he gives them a perimeter dimension and some speed on the edge, which every team wants to have.
Hey, Greg, there was a great stat put together by your folks at NFL Matchup about kind of go-to receivers, and it showed that Cole Beasley has an 18% reception rate and passes aimed, you know, from Josh Allen in his direction. That tells us that Josh has a comfort level already built up with Cole Beasley, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I think if I remember correctly, the last game, you know, those kinds of throws are critical because those are the chain movers, Murph. You know, obviously Cole Beasley is not a vertical player. He's not going to average 16, 17 yards a reception. What you're counting on with Cole Beasley for the most part, if it's second and long or third and six, is that he works inside with pivot routes, with option routes, and that Josh Allen delivers the ball. You know, the key thing is when it's third and six, if Cole Beasley catches a pass and it's for 8 yards, that's a good play. Yep. And those are the kinds of throws that we want to see Josh Allen make more of, and that's why Cole Beasley was brought in. There's no mystery to what Cole Beasley is. That's the kind of receiver he is.
And flipping it around kind of to the other side of the ball for the Bills here, Greg, I mean, another stat that you guys had brought up, and I think it's been documented before just because they've had so much success, is the defense getting off the field after just three plays. I mean, they have the second highest three-and-out percentage in the league. Going against this offense of Miami, it figures to get even better at playing at home, right?
You would certainly think so, Chris. I mean, this Miami offense, the offensive line has kind of been a work in progress throughout the season, different guys playing different positions. They really haven't developed any kind of consistent pass game at all. So you would think that this Buffalo defense, which I really enjoy watching, they're so fundamentally sound, they're execution efficient, they don't make mistakes. You know, you would think that this defense would be in a good position to play well on Sunday and really not give Miami many chances to score.
We're with Greg Cosell, executive producer, analyst of NFL Matchup on ESPN, senior producer, NFL Films. So the Dolphins make the move to Ryan Fitzpatrick. Bills know him pretty well. Bills fans certainly do. What do you think Miami expects to get from Fitzpatrick that maybe they didn't get in the first two games this year?
You know what? Your guess would be as good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think, look, you know, you know me well enough to know that I don't rip coaches. I never do that because I know how hard they work, and they're watching tape and they're doing what's best for their team. But it was a week ago that they announced that Josh Rosen would be the starter for the rest of the season. And then this week they obviously took Rosen out and put Fitzpatrick in and now named him the starter for Sunday. So I'm not sure what they're thinking, and I'm just being totally honest. You know, so look, they're probably looking at him as a veteran quarterback playing against a defense that is really difficult to play against, and that a veteran would have a better chance to execute their game plan against this style of defense than Josh Rosen. That would be my guess.
And then, I mean, as if they didn't have enough to deal with, you know, we see the news about Kenyon Drake and how he's on the trade block and how he wouldn't mind a change of scenery. He's probably not alone in that locker room and thinking that way. So how do you – as Brian Flores, as a head coach, how do you kind of keep this train on the track with all of this ancillary stuff going on?
Well, that you know what? That's way beyond my simple mind, Chris. My investment portfolio is not big enough to have to answer that question. I don't know the answer to that. I mean, you know, it's a tough deal. They're not a very talented team. They have a lot of injuries. Obviously, they did play a competitive game against Washington and lost. But I don't know. I don't know how you do that. You just look, we know coaches. You guys know coaches. Coaches don't think like that. They just come in and they grind and they work and they put together a plan and they believe that plan will be effective against the given opponent. That's all you can do.
Hey, Greg, let's get you to some of the other issues, some of the games going on in the NFL. And Pat Mahomes, we find out just moments ago, he's going to miss some time. The MRI showed no real significant damage to his kneecap. But I heard it's that you were indicating, I think on Ross Tucker's podcast perhaps, that with his earlier injury, Mahomes had not really been himself even before he got hurt last night, huh? What did you see?
Well, I can't speak to how his previous injury affected his play. I can only tell you what the tape showed. And the last three games, teams had played high percentage man-to-man against the Chiefs. And the Chiefs had struggled a bit. Because when you play man, you're challenging an offense. You're challenging receivers to win and to run precise routes to create separation. You're challenging the quarterback to throw on time into tight windows with precise ball placement. Over the last three games, Mahomes had not done that. Mahomes had been very loose and a bit undisciplined with his mechanics. And I know there were a lot of people when he came out of Texas Tech that were concerned a bit about that, that he was that style player. He also missed some wide open receivers. There were other times he didn't turn it loose to open receivers. So Mahomes had not played particularly well. You know, we don't know how it would have played out. Look, he's a very, very talented thrower. That is inarguable. But he had not played particularly well for the reasons I just suggested.
He's human.
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, it's the one thing that has now become such a big issue when you evaluate quarterbacks, and we see it with Josh Allen as well, is the balance between playing with precision from the pocket within structure versus the ability to be a little looser and play outside of the structure. And there's a balance there. And the quarterbacks that can do it, my guess is you don't want to take that away from them, but you don't want that to be the foundation of their game. So there's a strong balance there. You know, when Pat Mahomes makes great throws falling away or stepping into the bucket when he doesn't need to, do you say to Patrick Mahomes, hey, that's not good, we have to be better? Or do you say, great throw? I'm not a coach. I don't know the answer to that.
And while Mahomes goes out of the lineup for the Chiefs, it looks like Saquon Barkley's moving into the lineup for the Giants this week, has the green light. And we haven't seen much of him with Daniel Jones together in the lineup. So how does that – I mean, obviously it's going to make life easier for Daniel Jones, I would think, because we would expect, what, more eight in the box, right, Greg?
Well, I think you get that anyway. And, you know, again – you know, the big myth is that you can't run against eight in the box. Obviously, good running teams always run against eight in the box because that's what teams play. And teams by formation know they're going to get eight in the box by personnel and formation. So that's one of those sort of gospel myths about the NFL that holds no truth whatsoever. But the Giants are going to try to run the ball, and they'll use Barkley, I believe, in the pass game as well, both offset in the backfield and detached from the formation. He's an outstanding receiver, and they'll make him a focus of what they do. Now, Engram is back as well, and Engram is a very intriguing player because of how he can be used.
Greg Cosell is on the line with us from ESPN's NFL matchup. Greg, another game that is interesting, I think. It's the Colts, who would like to make a run at the Houston Texans in that division, but Deshaun Watson's playing at virtually an MVP level right now, isn't he?
Yeah, and I like Deshaun Watson, but I think one thing that's been overlooked, Murph, because, you know, Deshaun, from the time he came in the league, he was a big name, deservedly so, is this team's running the ball very well. And first of all, they run the ball on first down at a high percentage. People might not be aware of that. Carlos Hyde, because he's been discarded from a number of teams and no one thinks about him, has actually been a really important part of what they do. Now, Watson certainly is a very good player. He's only going to get better, obviously, as he gains more experience as well. And you know, he's a good thrower. He can move. Their O-line has gotten significantly better, which I knew it would. They're playing with three first-round picks. One of them got hurt, but he'll be back. And I have to tell you, watching them last week against the Chiefs, Laremy Tunsil, he was dominant. He looked like the absolute prototypical left tackle.
That's Greg Cosell. We will take a timeout here, and we'll hear more of him when we come back. Sports Talk Saturday with WGR rolls along here. Jody Biasi on WGR. Welcome back to Sports Talk Saturday on WGR. Let's hear more from NFL Films and ESPN matchups, Greg Cosell.
You know, going from a quarterback that's, you know, taking off, let's go to two that might be done. The top two picks in the 2015 draft, I mean, Mariota and Winston. Oh. And the irony of this for me, Greg, and I don't know how you feel about this, but you have one guy in Jameis Winston who cannot avoid mistakes and hasn't been able to his entire career. And in my opinion, you got a guy like Mariota who, if anything, has been too conservative through the course of his career. I don't know how you feel, but these guys might be at the end of their rope here as far as their NFL starting careers go.
Maybe not Winston as much as Mariota, because I think Arians will still look at Winston as a talented player who he can fix. Mariota has had a number of issues throughout his career, and he's had moments, of course. He was a number two pick in a draft. But he's a little difficult to watch at times. His mechanics have been poor, lower body mechanics have always been a little poor. I always sense watching him, Chris, that he doesn't have an innate understanding of what would be viewed as open in the NFL, and therefore he leaves a lot of throws on the field by not turning it loose, which leads to sacks, which automatically gets assigned to the offensive line when they're not all the offensive line's fault. He's certainly not a turn-it-loose thrower, and his accuracy and ball placement has been very erratic and inconsistent.
Greg, here's an interesting game late Sunday. The Ravens at Seattle. You guys probably deal with that on the NFL matchup show.
And yeah, I did, in fact, I dealt with it. Murph, you're 100% right.
Good guess by me. Tell me what you said in your analysis of the course of action for the Ravens with the quarterback. And should they let him run that much, do you think? And should they do it this week against Seattle?
Well, I think their offense, the foundation of it is the run game, with Lamar Jackson being a significant part of that. They're a pistol formation-based offense. They like to run a lot of base plays from different formations and different looks. They just get to base plays differently. Jackson's a meaningful part of that. At this point in his career, he's a better runner than he is a thrower. The Seahawks will do what they've been doing all year. They'll line up in their base defense. They're anathema to the rest of the league. The Seahawks play in their base defense about 70% of the snaps. No one does that. It's more than twice any other team in the league, and they line up with a 6-1 front, six across, and the one stacked linebacker, Bobby Wagner. And they'll try to keep Jackson from getting outside and outflank their defense.
Yeah, tell me your thoughts on the job that Greg Roman has done with Lamar Jackson and that Ravens offense. I think he did a good job here in Buffalo with less than optimal conditions, and it seems like he's kind of hit a stride now with that team in Baltimore.
Well, I think he's playing to what his quarterback is.
Yeah.
Don't forget, he was the OC in San Francisco with Colin Kaepernick. So you understand the strengths of your quarterback and the limitations of your quarterback. So you play to the strengths, which involves them in the run game. And ideally, what that does is it creates some hesitation, indecision, and confusion for certain defenders who are in conflict. And it creates and defines easier throws by NFL standards. That's what you're trying to do with quarterbacks who are not great throwers, like Colin Kaepernick and Lamar Jackson.
And another matchup that I know Bills fans will have a secondary eye on is the Monday night game between their two division rivals, the Jets and the Patriots. Everybody's gaga after Darnold's big game against Dallas in his return from mono. But he's going against the number one defense in football that has put a stranglehold on just about every quarterback they face this year. Should we expect Darnold to maybe take a step back from what we saw him do against Dallas last week?
You know, Chris, you know what's amazing to me? You know, I don't spend a lot of time looking at stats because I try to watch film and make my observations based on film. But the Patriots have played six games. You know how many third down conversions they've given up in six games?
What is it, two? Ten.
That's ridiculous. Ten. And they line up. There's no mystery to what they do from a coverage standpoint. They line up. They play man-to-man. This will be a tough go for the Jets because their receivers are going to have to win and separate versus man. Maybe Darnold's going to have to move around to try to create more time, but it's going to be very difficult to execute against this man-to-man coverage, and they play man-to-man a high, high percentage of the time.
Greg, one more game to ask you about, team to ask you about, at least the Rams. How does Jalen Ramsey help solve their issues after, you know, their recent struggles? They come east to play the Falcons on Sunday. Is Jalen Ramsey the answer for them?
Well, I think if he plays offensive guard or center, he would be.
Right. Their problems are on offense, aren't they?
Yeah, I think they're having some offensive issues. I think defensively, they've been up and down. I'm going to be very interested to see what Wade Phillips does because he's been a predominant zone coach this year. They play a lot of zone coverage. Of course, the Jaguars did too. I think Ramsey has ideal traits to play man-to-man, but the Jaguars didn't ask him to play a ton of man-to-man either. So we'll see, because don't forget, when you play man, it's not just Jalen Ramsey. There's other players that have to play man-to-man as well. And now their corner opposite Ramsey is Troy Hill, and their slot is Nicole Roby Coleman, and they have to line up and play man as well. So Wade Phillips and the defensive staff have to decide if, hey, man is our best approach for everyone in the secondary, or if it's not, then we're still probably going to play some zone.
Going to be interesting. Hey, Greg, thanks for this. We'll look for you this weekend and talk to you again next Friday. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Murph. Thanks, Chris. Appreciate it.
All right, there's Greg Cosell. You can hear all our good interviews like him, if you didn't hear the full thing, at WGR550.com, the radio.com app. Thanks, everybody, for listening. I will be back with you tomorrow for Bills pregame with Nate Geary starting at 10 o'clock here on WGR.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.